Welcome back to Mental Health Matters, and we have an incredibly exciting show today. One that makes me think about the movies, which I'll tell you about in a second. This is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry, and on 100.1 on your FM dial, KRUU-FM, the greatest radio show on the planet, and the greatest radio station on the planet. How's that? I am Dr. Scott Terry. I do have a trauma background, among many other backgrounds. I am a therapist. I run a number of organizations. And my co-host today is Rob Hubler. We're again talking about PTSD with veterans, and we have a fascinating story we're going to bring you today. Rob, where would you like to say something?
Well, I'm Rob, and I've had a lot of trauma in my life, too, only I didn't get a degree. But anyway, today, you know, we're doing this PTSD series, and we've been in South Africa, California. We're now in Texas. We did one here in Fairfield.
So, oh, yeah, it's true.
You know, so PTSD is a worldwide thing. And so today we've got Matt. And Matt's with us in Texas. And Matt, tell us just a little bit about where are you from originally?
I'm originally from a very small town in Texas. Had a Opie Taylor childhood, and my family resettled over the last few years to San Antonio. So this is where I've decided to hang my hat.
Okay, and you were in the Army?
I was.
Okay,
I was in the Army. Originally, I was a Chinese linguist, but was reclassified after the war broke out, and I became an interrogator. I was deployed to Afghanistan.
Are you aware that at this very moment they're debating the interrogation law in Congress?
I am.
Yeah, right.
You know, and obviously, having been in the industry, follow all of that stuff very closely.
Right, right.
It's interesting you call it the industry.
I know. I picked up on that word myself.
I was like, wow. Well, you said you were an investigator. So tell us about what you actually did. Interrogator for 10 years in Afghanistan.
Wow.
Correct.
And how long were you in the military total?
I was in the military for 8 years. After my first tour, I recognized, as many active duty people did, that you know, remaining on the military side, that we were going to be deployed year after year after year. There were a handful of people that were offered opportunities to go into the private sector and also, you know, government sector.
Sure.
So a lot of people did make jumps at various times, as I did.
Whereabouts in Afghanistan were you?
A better question would be, where haven't I been? Might be a shorter answer. Briefly, I've been to probably 75% of every province, you know, and you know, inside those provinces, maybe 90% of the districts.
Okay. All right, so backing up a little further from that, so you grew up in Texas, and what brought you into the military? By the way, I'm a vet, too. I served 7 years in the Navy during the Vietnam War. I don't know if you're not... How old are you?
I'm 45 now.
Oh, well, you remember the Vietnam War. All right.
Well, now, I think a lot of military people sort of share a common thread.
That's right.
I come from a military family. So growing up, you know, I got to see my uncles and many cousins, you know, wearing their various military uniforms. And I would, you know, I guess I would say it's just kind of a family thing. So almost a rite of passage, if you will. So I did feel that after I graduated from college that, you know, it would be a good thing, you know, to serve not only the country, but, you know, maybe my family legacy as well.
Yeah, we have the same backgrounds, kind of. On my mother's side of the family, which are 11 kids, they all served in the military. In fact, one of them was in the NSA, in the CIA. And but on my father's side, everybody was a conscientious objector. So figure that out. We'll do a radio show on that someday.
And we have, by the way, one of my interns, Jen, who's here. Say hi, Jen.
Hi, Matt.
And Jen also comes from a military family with military kids. So,
how did you pick military?
Yeah, so how did you pick the military? Why? Because it was just in the family? It was just something to do? Or
Part, Partly. I graduated with a degree in biology and some, you know, various minors in some of the sciences like math and physics. I was interested in biopharmaceutical research and got into it. And basically, the company that I was working for at the time had two different departments there, one that was unclassified and one that was classified. And I was told that, you know, if I wanted to get into the classified section, that, you know, you would have to have a security clearance. And there's a lot of people, you know, at that time or in that situation that would opt to go into the military, you know, and pursue an occupation where you would have a clearance that you could use both in and out of the military.
Okay.
Hey, Matt, I have a question for you here. How many tour of duties were you on over there?
I did two tours.
Okay. Now, have you been diagnosed with PTSD and TBI or just PTSD?
You know, I'm going to be very honest with you, and this is sort of a sad, you know, state, I think, inside the military. People are afraid to admit that they have PTSD when you're coming off deployment, and the reason is because after 9 months or a year, you really just want to go home. You want to be with your family, you know, and put the experience behind you, you know. But if you admit during your, you know, your medical checks coming off deployment, oftentimes, many people's ability to go home is delayed for months. I know several people that ended up having to stick around on a base for a couple more months. So I did what most people did. I waited until I came off deployment, and then I checked in with the local VA clinic and began to talk to them. And, you know, of course, after a couple of sessions, they did, you know, say that you've got PTSD.
Well, and a lot of times... a lot of times, men in the military feel that they're weaker if they admit that there's something wrong with them. So that's a huge problem with military families because they really don't want to admit that something is going on.
You're absolutely right, Jen. And you know, I'll even caveat that by saying that, you know, there's a lot of people like infantrymen who suffer traumatic brain injuries. You know, there are certain people that you feel, you know, probably suffered through a different form of trauma or a more serious form of trauma or, you know, whatever. And so you feel like, you know, saying that you've got what they have, you know, somehow, you know, makes you feel like maybe you're taking advantage of a situation or something like that. But for those of us, you know, I was in a couple of attacks and, you know, almost lost my life on three separate occasions in the 10 years. And, you know, I feel like when you go through something like that, it's very hard to shake off and to forget.
That's understandable. It really is.
And do you feel like that's these attacks, these three separate attacks, is what created your PTSD? Or was it something else? Or was it a specific final straw? Or help somebody who wasn't in that situation try and understand what actually happened.
Sure. In the first one, I was in Kunar province. I was in a convoy. The vehicle right ahead of me was hit with an IED. It happened right in front of us. And our first sergeant was in that vehicle. He took the brunt of that explosion. He lost both of his legs in the attack, and he, you know, bled out in front of us. You know, seeing something like that, somebody that means so much to you, such a great man and a great father and everything. It was just, it's not just the attack. It's, you know, the realization that his wife is a widow, that his daughter, you know, is now, you know, an orphan or will be growing up without a father. These lingering, you know, sort of things that really, I think, you know, that do it for you. The other one was a suicide bomber. I was in a group of people in a district center. And a suicide bomber detonated himself. I think 13, if I remember correctly, 13 people were killed. A couple of people were injured. I myself took one piece of shrapnel, you know, in the abdomen. But, you know, it was out there everywhere. Things like that, you know, make you realize that had you been, standing 2 feet to the right or, you know, 5 feet to the left or whatever, the outcome would have been far different. The last attack was by far and away the most serious one. It was a well-coordinated attack at a place that I was working, a very small place, IEDs detonated at the same time. There were at least 12 suicide bombers. There was, you know, just a flurry of hand grenades and AK-47 fire and all that stuff. Everybody's weapons were drawn, and, I mean, this is, you know, right out of a Hollywood movie. It's a very surreal experience. And at the end of it, when you're stepping over, you know, dead people, and suicide bombers, when, you know, they detonate themselves, of course, there's, you know, parts everywhere. And, you know, you just sort of walk around, you know, after this, and, you know, you'll never forget the smell of everything, and, you know, the look of it and all that. But even more than just the attacks, you know, being an interrogator, we recognize that the information we collect is leading to the death of, you know, many, many people. And, you know, that certainly weighs on your sense of ethics and your sense of morality. You're constantly checking your moral compass and, you know, reassuring yourself that, you know, it's pointing due north. And then lastly, I would say just the operational tempo. For 10 years, this is no exaggeration, with 7 days a week, no holidays, no sick days, and it was on average 15 to 18 hours a day. And that kind of workload and that kind of stress produced at a high level, along with all the other things, begins to wear down on you.
By the way, you're listening to Mental Health Matters 100.1 on the FM dial, as well as on the internet everywhere. All these shows are archived, and we are so grateful to be talking to Matt today. Thank you for your service, by the way, Matt. And
my pleasure.
We're talking about PTSD in veterans and how it affects all of us through what's happened to you now influences what happens to everyone else as well, but also other experiences that we might have had, again, to not be judging it and saying, oh, somebody else had a much worse experience than I had, so how can I judge myself and I shouldn't have something? It's like everything's relative. It's all what affects us. But, you know, I think it's amazing listening to your story. And what really does, you know, all this stuff. But I'm amazed that, okay, so you're there, you're doing two tours of duty, and then you decide, hey, I'm also going to do it as a private contractor, and I'm going to keep staying. There's no let up. It's 7 days a week. There's no break. You're an investigator dealing with really intense situations, which you're going to tell us a little bit more about. Why do it again? Why go back? Why do another tour? Why stay? Why be in, you know?
Sure. You know, there's a lot of reasons. You know, I think that once you've been out there, like anything, the mission, you know, the overall mission, this war against terrorism, you know, I mean, the feeling of doing something and participating in something that, you know, hopefully will make America safer. The mission becomes a part of you, and when it does, it gets very hard to walk away. You know, you want anyone in any job, anywhere, wants their work to matter, you know, and you want to feel like the hours that you've sacrificed and the blood, sweat, and the tears, you know, that you've sacrificed is going to count for something. So I think a lot of people just become fixated, you know, with the importance of the mission. Also, and this is not to be romantic, you know, it really is a, for lack of a better word, a fraternity. I mean, there are men and women out there, but, you know, it's a band of brothers. You get to a point where when it's your turn to leave, you know, that's another family. And in certain ways, you're even closer to them because you've suffered through traumatic experiences together. Than your regular family. So you feel guilty. There's a lot of guilt. You don't want to leave people behind. You know, you don't want to leave until the job's done, so to speak.
And having that band of brothers, that family, that those people, you know, you hear about it with police as well, that they become closer to their partner, not just because they're with their partner all day, but because of the intensity of those experiences, that at times it becomes harder than to relate to not being with somebody who's going through those same experiences. How do you come home again, which I think is a really difficult point. How do you actually come home again? How do you get married, have a life, not get trapped in all this, and even today, to not part of your blood boil and want to go back?
You're absolutely right. You know, I think myself and the other guys that have done, you know, the same type of job I have, we all recognize that in many ways we were blessed. It is a very unique experience, one that, you know, many people would never be able to not only do, but to even comprehend. And so, like anything, I mean, you just naturally gravitate towards people who have been through the same thing. Because quite frankly, when you try to discuss it or to vent or to process what you're experiencing as you experience it, family members, as supportive as they are, they just have no idea what you're talking about. So there is a bond, you know, just like you said with the police officers and everyone else, there's a bond between people who have gone through the same experiences that you just can't get anywhere else.
And then what do you create from that? What's your next stage? You know, so all right. So go on, okay. Rob.
All right. So and then thank you very, very much for your service. This is Rob again. But so when you got out, you came back and you went to the VA clinic and they diagnosed you of having PTSD. What did they do then?
At that point, what they opted to do was, you know, meet several sessions of counseling and also medicine. Now that became an important decision point for me. I didn't want to be put on a bunch of pills. My mother and my sister both have very sensitive sort of immune systems with regard to prescribed medicines, and I believe I'm kind of the same. So we all have this sort of fear, you know, of taking certain pills. And without, you know, being too light, you know, I always laugh when I watch these commercials today, you know, with the next new, you know, pharmaceutical pill, because possible side effects include, you know, everything from permanent blindness to spontaneous combustion and, you know, all this stuff.
I like spontaneous combustion. That's a good one. Yeah,
notify your doctor right after that.
You know, to backtrack just a little bit, you know, my situation was unique in that I spent 10 years in Afghanistan. I would say the average for most people, military or otherwise, is maybe 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I had the luxury of being able to stay in touch with people who shared the same experience, but more importantly, went back to the United States and began to transition. So I began to live vicariously through all these colleagues and friends who were, you know, basically hitting, you know, various pitfalls from failed marriages, you know, just the stresses of the modern world. And, you know, I was realizing that most of them, and I mean a vast majority of these guys, were suffering. And they were choosing what I perceived to be unhealthy, you know, avenues for processing and for transitioning and dealing, you know, with the PTSD that they carried home. I didn't want to be that guy. I've got too much, you know, riding. I've got too many family members that, you know, require me to be healthy and happy and productive. So with all that, I had heard about, you know, various forms of meditation while I was still in Afghanistan and had done some research. I made a conscious decision to go and to find, you know, things that were healthier for being able to process and deal with the stresses that we bring home.
And how, so you didn't find all the medications and the therapeutic treatments that effective up till then?
To be fair, I didn't do them.
Okay.
Again, my, you know, my hesitance to get put on a bunch of anti-anxiety, you know, meds or anti-depression, you know, meds or something like that. You know, you hear about these drugs that just numb the mind. You know, I'm not sure if numbing us, you know, really, it's symptomatic in nature, you know. I think I understand that, you know, we shouldn't just treat the symptom. We should treat the problem, you know, the root of the problem. And And I believed that that was going to come through me being able to go in and tackle these, you know, these experiences and face these things and relive them and process them. So I've heard, you know, not to be unfair with the VA, I appreciate their support, and I know that they're trying hard, but, you know, this is an agency that I believe is just inundated with, hold on, I'm so sorry. I'm doing an interview, a phone interview.
That's okay. By the way, you're listening to Mental Health Matters at KRUU FM 100.1 on your FM dial, archived everywhere. If you're interested in communicating with us, email us at mentalhealthmatters@kruufm.com. And we're talking to Matt today about his PTSD experience as an investigator with 10 years in Afghanistan, and coming back and trying different options and really thoughtfully thinking through what would be a useful tool to get over his PTSD. Were you identified as PTSD by the VA, or did you just say, no, I know that I am?
I think all of us recognize, you know, over the years that we were suffering from the classic symptoms of PTSD, to go through all of the things that we were going through. However, like most everyone, like Jen even stated, you know, many of us would simply, avoid talking about it, you know, for obvious reasons. So,
well, you know, it's obvious to you, but why would it be obvious? Why would somebody avoid talking about it? Why? You know, what did you identify as those symptoms, and why would you avoid talking about it? I know that sounds really crazy to even ask.
Sure. No, not at all. And you know, it's a complicated, you know, sort of thing. But what I would imagine is, you know, like myself, you know, as I said, you've got a band of brothers. You realize that you are a part of something that's bigger than just yourself. You know, nobody wants to be the weak link in the chain. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, really need everyone to be firing on all cylinders and performing at a high level so that you can achieve what you're, you know, you're looking to achieve. To raise your hand, you know, in the middle of all that, you know, seems like you're letting people down. And as I stated before, you become very consumed in the mission, and you begin to prioritize and place the importance of the mission ahead of your own well-being.
Matt, if I might ask you a question here. I know you said that you didn't want to partake in any of the medication or anything like that, but substance abuse is very prevalent in especially soldiers with PTSD. Did you experience any of that self-medicating behavior, i.e. drinking or drugs, anything like that?
You know, in Afghanistan, I mean, it was easy because we didn't have access to any of those things, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no alcohol on the military bases.
Wow.
And, you know, being in Afghanistan, this is a country, you know, that doesn't have alcohol, you know, in its country. So, you know, for a lot of people, I think if you had some downtime, you know, you try to, say, exercise as an example. But as I stated earlier, our respective, you know, part of the mission, we're working 15 to 18 hours a day, and oftentimes we were working far more than that. I mean, that's the average. There were many times every week where you would work 36 hours straight, 40 hours straight without sleeping. And so the point is that when you finally got done and you had a bit of an operational pause, last thing you were going to go do was go run a couple of miles, you know, around the FOB or, you know, and go hit the gym or something like that. You just wanted to sleep. So we found ourselves really unable, incapable of dealing with the stresses, you know, that we faced every day. And so it just starts piling up, and pretty soon it becomes insurmountable.
And then when you get home, it's a different story because now you have all this time and you don't know what to do with it. And then that's when the self-medicating behaviors start.
Right. And, you know, to finish the thought, I mean, again, I knew so many people that had left Afghanistan. And, of course, you know, you stay in touch with these people. People who share an experience like that, you find you remain family wherever they go. And I found that a lot of the guys coming back were self-medicating. You know, either they didn't want to go to the VA or, you know, or they were doing stuff on top of what they were getting from, you know, professionals. And a lot of these guys were turning to alcohol and or drugs. And, you know, as I stated earlier, I didn't want to be that guy. You know, I didn't want to be somebody who survived, you know, all those years in Afghanistan only to become a casualty of war back here in the States.
Matt, that's all very, very, very good. But let's get to what TM did for you.
Transcendental meditation. So, as I stated, I began to research certain things while still in Afghanistan, knowing that I would, you know, begin to transition, you know, back here. So, I found, you know, transcendental meditation to be a form of meditation that seemed most comfortable, the one that I thought would, you know, sort of fit me and the way I think and all that. So I reached out and was connected to a transcendental meditation center here in San Antonio, Texas, and made an appointment. And we've got two instructors, a married couple out here, and just wonderful people. And I found that my very first session was incredible. I had never done anything like meditation before, and more importantly, transcendental meditation. And I found that literally from the first, you know, time I tried it, that it had a positive benefit. You know, I ended the program refreshed, clear, and stress-free. And I just felt like, you know, I found something that was going to work for me. And I'm very proud to say for 4 months I've been faithful, you know, to doing two programs a day, every day, since that first session.
Does anybody else in your family do it?
No.
Okay.
Oddly enough. Most of the people in my family are, you know, the older generation. And a lot
now,
of guys
be careful, be careful.
Had their war experience and have learned how to settle or deal with those things in their own way.
All right. You're listening.
I'm not
to
giving up hope.
You're listening to KRUU Radio, and we're running out of time, I think.
We got another minute here.
Okay.
So, Matt, what would you like to say to close today? It sounds like, in a lot of ways, through this whole experience, TM has been your saving grace. But is there anything else you'd like to say or anything else you'd like to sum it all up with?
I would. You know, just to anyone out there going through any trauma, you know, but something like post-traumatic stress disorder, for the people in Africa, the people, you know, that have served in Afghanistan and Iraq, I want to let them know that transcendental meditation really works. It is incredible. It is the most effective, healthiest thing I have found in my attempts, you know, to transition positively, you know, back here in the real world. It is effortless, it's easy, and it's just been a godsend for me. And I would love to be able to meet with a lot of these people or at least influence them to go out there and give it a try. So there's some great stuff out there.
And essentially, all of us don't have to be trapped in our own skin, no matter what's going on with any of us. That there are ways out of this, and
absolutely.
to reach
and
out.
Everybody suffers trauma.
Absolutely, especially with trauma. That there is a way out of this. You get out of your own head, and the isolation and the pain doesn't have to exist. Thank you so much, Matt. We're out of time today, and thank you, Rob and Jen. And Matt, thank you again for your service. Thank you, everyone, for your service out there. We are honored that you are with us trying to make a difference in this world. You are listening to KRU-FM, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.